The programming on 88.1 FM is made possible in part by WWER Watts members, who show their support of community radio by donating online at wwer.org/membership. If you like our programming, please consider contributing to wwer.org/membership. Welcome to another edition of Town Matters on WWER. My name is Ted Tate, and with me today on Town Matters is Tiffany Bounds. She's the director of the Mobile Integrated Healthcare for Westmoreland County. Is that right, Tiffany?
That is. Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. We're not talking to Robin Schick this month. We usually do, but we wanted to give you a little chance to talk to us about Mobile Integrated Healthcare. And what's going on? This is a relatively new program in Westmoreland County, and you're trying to get the word out.
I am. Thank you. So Westmoreland County started a mobile integrated healthcare program back in October 22. So it's been a year now that we've had the program.
Well, happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you. So, yeah, I joined Westmoreland County Emergency Services 3 years ago. And 2 years ago, the chief approached me and asked me if I would be interested in starting a mobile integrated healthcare program for the county. I was very enthusiastically excited to do this and have an opportunity to bring this service to the county.
So is your training, you're an EMS tech or?
Yeah, so my training is, I've been an LPN nurse since 2006. And I was most recently with Mary Washington Hospital until 2020. And when the pandemic happened, I felt a need to shift over to EMS. I felt like my services would be better rendered there. And so that's when I started working for Westmoreland County in the spring of 2020. So, and I'm an EMT as well.
Okay. And so your chief comes to you and says the county wants to start this new program.
Yeah.
Did you even know what it was at that point?
I had heard about it, but I didn't know a whole lot, honestly. So I just knew what mobile integrated healthcare is basically filling the gap in between EMS and the medical system and trying to figure out why people repeatedly call 911 and you see the same people over and over and they keep, you know, calling 911, they go to the hospital, they come back, they call again. And so my job is to basically go out and figure out what's really going on and to approach them more holistically and give them the resources and the wraparound care and the education to have better, healthier lives.
That's interesting. So, let's get to the crux of this, why it's necessary and what's going on here. And I think you've explained it nicely that these are people who, for whatever reason, maybe don't have a general practitioner that they go to regularly. They don't get regular health care, regular checkups, maybe that sort of thing. And they definitely have some issues going on that, for whatever reason, whether it's because they can't afford it or what have you, that they let things go until it's critical, and then they're calling 911.
Yeah, basically. So I think living in a rural area in particular puts people at a disadvantage. And a lot of times they just don't have the resources or they don't even know that they're there. So a lot of times they'll call 911 because they don't have transportation or they don't know what doctor to go to, or there's very few primary care providers that are in the area. And, you know, and the medical world is so convoluted and difficult to navigate that sometimes it's just easier to call 911 and go to the emergency room for the most basic needs when that really bogs down the system. That's not what it's meant to do. So it puts a strain on the EMS system. It takes away resources from people when they really need them, but it also bogs down the emergency room when they're seeing people that aren't critical. So it's necessary to educate people and to get them where they need to go, where they're really going to get the help that they need.
Yeah, there are plenty of stories of people who go to the emergency room because they waited too long or whatever, but then they have to wait in the emergency room for hours and hours on end because actually they're not as critical as the people being brought in an ambulance.
Yeah. Well, and especially, you know, Mary Washington is the closest hospital to this area, and it's a trauma center. So you're looking at sometimes up to, you know, a 12-hour wait to be seen, and that's awful. No one wants to do that either. So
And then I guess the other problem that some people have to navigate is the bureaucracy of the healthcare system and the insurance system.
Absolutely. Yeah. That was actually one of my biggest driving factors of moving to EMS and getting out of nursing was the bureaucracy. I just want to help people without having to worry about what kind of insurance they have or if they have the ability to pay. And EMS has given me that opportunity to just help. And that's what I'm here for.
That's what you want to be doing.
That's what I want to do.
And so what let's talk about what you physically are doing. You are providing healthcare to people and you are going to them. You're a mobile healthcare unit. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So how it works is with between the sheriff's office, social services, and EMS, when they go out on a call and they see somebody and they identify that there's a need that's not being met. So they see a resident and they say, you know, I can't help these people, but I see that there's a need there. I'm not sure what it is, or they just need something.
And it's usually like, it is not a critical thing. It's an ongoing thing.
Correct. Yeah. These are chronic issues. Yeah. So it could be an education piece. It could be that they don't have transportation. Maybe they don't have food and they don't know how to go about getting it or where those resources are. Something alerts the first responders in our area that there's a need that needs to be met and it's not being met. So they reach out to me and then I go out to their home and meet with them. And rather than having a 10 or 15 minute exchange with someone, which would be typical in 911, usually you're trying to just meet that critical need, I'm able to spend an hour or two with people on a regular basis and really get to know them and figure out what is going on and what are their social determinants of health? What are the barriers that are causing them to not get what they need to have a fulfilling, healthy life? So not only am I addressing chronic 911 users, but I'm also seeing people with mental health issues and also people that are having substance abuse issues. So for example, I go out on all of our overdose calls and I will sit with them for hours after, if necessary, to get them a bed into rehab if they want to go. And I'll hold their hand throughout the entire process and check on them and connect them with a peer support. So that way they have somebody from the community service board that has lived experience with substance abuse and connect them with their peer. And that way they have that support to help get them sober and clean.
You're really part social worker, part EMS.
I'm a little bit of everything.
And so you said you're going out on calls or following the ambulance?
I am, yeah. So I'm the only provider that does this for the county now. I'd like to grow this program and eventually there will hopefully be a bunch of us. But for now, it's just me. So I can't do 24/7, obviously. But when a call does happen and I'm available, I do try to go in real time. If not, I'll try to follow up within at least 24 hours. So,
And you're making house calls.
And I'm making house calls.
Now, yeah. this is part of a program that is funded by the county. So the people you're seeing, they're not paying for this, are they?
So they are not. No, it's a free service. I'm actually, the county got a grant through Bay Rivers Telehealth Alliance. We were awarded a 3-year grant to run mobile integrated healthcare. So as of right now, yes, I'm being supported by the county though. But the program is paid for by this grant. So
your supplies and your salary and your truck and whatever, all of that's
through the grant. Yes. Mm-hmm. The idea is that within 3 years of this grant that I will be fully functional and up and running and that I would be able to be self-sufficient to run on my own without the need for the grant. So hopefully that'll be absorbed through the county.
So when you say self-sufficient, that means the county budgets to undergo these expenses rather
Correct.
Than the grant.
Yeah. I think that the Board of Supervisors and our county government can clearly see that this is a very valuable asset to our residents. And they're also seeing that, again, the goal is to help 911 be utilized correctly So that's going to save taxpayers a ton of money when the system is being used correctly, and that there's another resource that's out there to, again, vet people and get them to where they really need to go and get the help that they need versus using 911.
Yeah, I mean, I guess a lot of people don't think of it this way, but when you spend money wisely on programs like this to prevent the constant use of emergency facilities, in the longer term, people are healthier and therefore don't need the medical attention in the first place, and you save money.
Absolutely. Yeah, preventative medicine is always where it's at. That's the best way to go, you know, not only just financially, but also, again, holistically, you know, and
better
quality of life. Absolutely.
And having just had your first anniversary of doing this in October, I assume you're reporting to the county council on how things are going. I read a brief article about all of this. It sounds like you hit the ground running.
Yeah.
where instead of starting your practice, as it were, months after you put your shoes in the job, you mm-hmm. actually did it that you started seeing people in October, the month you like took on the position immediately. And you were kind of hit the ground running and were doing it. And I guess now reporting to the county that, yeah, we're doing, these are the good things we're doing.
Yeah. Well, when I walked in, it was October 3rd of 2022, and I walked into EMS headquarters and they said, make me a program. I started from scratch.
Right.
So the intention was that we were going to start seeing patients by January. However, as I'm sitting there and trying to figure this out and what I'm doing, I just figured the best way to learn how to do this is to just do it. So I'm still learning, and it is still evolving and changing. And, you know, I'm figuring out what works, what doesn't work. I think one of the most successful things that I did was in January, I started a community partners committee. And what that is that once a month, I bring community stakeholders to a table and we all sit down. So this is the community service board, social services, the sheriff's office, Colonial Beach Police Department, Bay Aging, VCU, you know, multiple stakeholders that are in the community.
So these are agencies that either are seeing these people who need this help, or agencies like Bay Aging who provide help for people.
Yes.
And getting them together in the same room.
So, yes. So we do it in person, which I think is valuable. And we all sit down and we discuss the needs of the community. And we share resources with each other and bounce ideas off of each other of how to help. So it's a collaborative effort with everyone in the community, and it just has that buy-in. Everybody from every facet of the community, all are working together to help our residents, which I think is really amazing. So,
and also to some degree, make their own jobs easier in the sense of, again, if you're doing preventive things, then you're not going to get as many urgent calls.
Right. Correct. Yeah.
And everybody benefits from it.
Absolutely.
That's amazing. And from what I understand, you are the first in the area to be in, I guess, all of Northern Neck to be doing this, where the Westmoreland is the first county to be doing this?
We are, and I hope I'm a trendsetter here. I've been helping other counties to try and get MIH programs funded and up and running. I'm also teaching a class at RCC about community paramedicine and mobile integrated healthcare. So the new cohort or the next cohort will be at the end of November. So if anyone's interested in that.
What is a cohort? A
cohort's just the next class.
Oh, okay.
So just
okay.
A group of people. So
At Rappahannock Community College.
Rappahannock Community College, yeah. So.
And do people pay to attend that, or?
So it's also funded under the grant right now.
Okay.
So the first 50 people to take this course, it's covered. So
And what are you teaching them?
So I'm teaching them the transition from critical care, like being on a 911 ambulance, to doing mobile integrated healthcare. So teaching them, instead of meeting the critical need, you're now transitioning over to a mindset of looking at a patient holistically from head to toe and looking at their environment, their situation, their educational background, their social determinants of health, doing a home safety assessment and making sure that there aren't fall hazards or that their smoke detectors are working or that they have carbon monoxide monitors.
And you're absolutely making house calls here and mm-hmm. and you're being a little bit of everything, it sounds like. I mean, you're almost a life coach.
Sort of, yeah. So I certainly don't have all the credentials to do all that. But the good news is that I have other people that do. And so I connect them with those people. And so I just kind of, I'm the liaison and just trying to help, again, get people the tools that they need to live healthy lives.
I've always said you don't have to know everything yourself. You just have to know somebody who does.
Know somebody. Exactly. So, yeah.
And in this class at Rappahannock Community College, are you hoping to basically lead some young people down the path of the job that you're doing now and hopefully recruit more people and expand your operation?
Absolutely. That's exactly what I want to do. But, I want to see this everywhere. Mobile integrated healthcare is not a new concept. It's actually been around since, I want to say, 2009. It's just started to build traction. So, again, we don't have, I'm the only one in this area, but Chesterfield has an amazing program that they've had since, I think, 2013. And I think Madison County is trying to start an MIH program. Down in like Yorktown, they have an MIH program. So they're popping up, but honestly, they should be everywhere. Mm. So
now you're actively looking for people that you can help by, as you said, speaking to EMS people, speaking to sheriffs who go to people's homes and see things, mm-hmm. and just observing yourself by following along. Are you also looking for people to reach out to you and say, hey, after I heard this radio show, you know, I have a grandmother who could use some help or I need some help and I don't know who to turn to. Are you there for that as well?
Absolutely. Yeah? Sure. Yeah. I know. I want to spread the word. I want as many people to know about me and this program and so I can help connect them.
Yeah. So if somebody is in one of those situations where they want to reach out on their behalf or somebody else's behalf, how should they contact you?
So they can contact me through email at mih@westmoreland-county.org, or they can call the office. I don't know my number.
I have your office number listed here as 804-493-9147.
That's it.
Just have business cards you hand out.
Yeah, exactly. So.
So if somebody wants to contact you, email or phone call is perfectly acceptable?
Yeah, absolutely.
But I suspect you're out of the office quite a bit if you're running around doing all these house calls.
I am. I'm in and out constantly, so yeah.
But they can leave you a message or an email, and then you'll obviously follow up.
Yes, I will.
And back with them.
Sure, yeah.
And I'm guessing this is not a Monday through Friday 9-to-5 kind of job.
It's not. So, it's kind of whenever there's a need that's... I don't have regular hours, no.
So, do you have a life?
No, not really. Well, this is my life, you know. I feel like this is really my calling, and I am very passionate about helping people, and I love what I do, so it doesn't really feel like work at all. So,
that's the best kind of job there is. It sounds very challenging. I mean, you are dealing with medical issues, you're dealing with personality issues, you're dealing with mental issues, you're dealing with substance abuse issues. I mean, it sounds like it can be very emotionally draining at times and yet rewarding as well.
It can, yeah. I can't tell you when I first started this, I wanted to take every little elderly person home with me and start my own nursing home. You can't help but get connected with people and feel for them. And there are some challenges. You know, I wish I could fix everything. Unfortunately, there's a lot of red tape, and sometimes my best intentions fall short, and I just can't. I can't help everyone, unfortunately. Yeah,
unfortunately, you can't fix the whole system. You can only try to point people in the right directions.
Right, yeah. And I think that's one of the most heartbreaking things is that, I really invest in my patients, and I really care about them. And no matter how much I may want someone to get help or go in a certain direction, it's really up to them. And it's out of my control. And that's sometimes difficult for me when I want so badly for someone to take my hand and get the help that they need or to live a better, healthier life. It's not my choice.
And yeah. I mean, I imagine, especially dealing with substance abuse people, that's hard because you want to help them. And at the time that you're seeing them, they're at a very low point where they're saying, I absolutely want to do this and I want to help and I want to fix things and I want to do that. And then a week later, you're back at their house because they OD'd again or something.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking, honestly. So I am aware of that. You know, there's a term that they use, compassion fatigue, and I certainly suffer from it on certain days. You know, again, you can take someone's burden and place it on yourself, and I'm very empathetic, and I kind of pull that suffering and almost make it my own sometimes. And I have to be conscious of that and take a mental break and talk about it, you know, and work through it, because it certainly is a dangerous area sometimes when you're so passionate about helping other people that you can really take their burden on as your own. And you have to be careful.
It's a challenge, and you've got to look out for yourself. You know, we have a program on the radio station called Your Care Partners, where we talk about being a care provider. Usually these are people who are spouses or children of elderly people and that sort of thing. And they know less about what they're getting into than you do. You at least walk into this with very open eyes. Mm-hmm. You know, but the stories sometimes that they tell is that the care provider gets overwhelmed and doesn't even realize that they're being overwhelmed, and it takes its toll on them. And we talk a lot about that in that show about, you know, the provider, the care provider, making sure they take time for themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's services for that as well. So even when I go in to see a patient, I'm not just looking at the patient. Like I said, I'm looking at their environment, but I'm also looking at their caregivers. And sometimes they're getting all the resources that they need. And I identify that it's the caregiver that needs respite. And so, you know, they're doing all they can, but they're exhausted. And they need, you know, the caregiver is the one that ends up being my patient. And
interesting.
That needs help. Yeah.
Interesting.
So, and there are services that are out there to help get that respite care and for you to take a breather and go take a walk. And
somebody who can come in for a day or a couple of hours and just say to you, go do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. And there are services that are here in our area for that. But again, a lot of times people just don't know until they know. So,
and they again, don't take the time to think, oh, what can I do for myself?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of caregiver guilt that happens because they feel like they're supposed to be, you know, this superwoman or superman, and they're supposed to be able to handle it all. And they feel guilty that they're struggling with it, when that's very common. And it doesn't have to be that way. It's okay to ask for help.
That's a good motto to repeat to yourself. It's okay to ask for help.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Tiffany, thank you for coming to WWER. Let me ask you, is there, you know, when we watch a TV show, we always wait, you know, we in half an hour, we've got a happy ending. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got a resolution to the issue. Do you get to see that much, or is it always kind of open-ended and you don't know? Do you get that closure?
So I think in mobile integrated healthcare, I get more closure than most. In EMS, again, when you call 911 and somebody comes out and the ambulance takes you to the hospital, 9 times out of 10, they have no idea how it concluded.
Yeah.
I, on the other hand, am in their lives on a regular basis. I'm having weekly visits or weekly phone calls, and so I'm getting to see a conclusion most of the time. It's not always a happy ending.
I was going to say good or bad, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. But at least I get to know. Yeah, there's a conclusion to what's going on.
And so there are people that you've helped and you know you've helped, and then you move on because they no longer need your support. They now have the infrastructure around them that you've helped them find.
Yes.
That they're now doing that, and maybe you just check in on them every 6 months or so just to say, hey, how's it going?
Yeah, I mean, the idea is kind of catch and release. There's 17,000 plus residents of Westmoreland County, and again, I'm the only provider, so unfortunately, I can't hang on to everybody. So the goal is to get to them, give them the resources and the education that they need, so that way they can take control of their healthcare and their lives, and then release them. And then, you know, of course, they have my contact information. So if they run into troubles or anything and they need my help again, then they can always come back. But yeah, the idea is to catch and release.
And do you find folks come back to you for various reasons?
So the program's only been, you know, going on for a year. So I haven't really had too many repeat people that come back at this point. So as the program goes on longer, then maybe I'll see that. But no, I think most of the time they're pretty self-sufficient and kind of, you know, they get what they needed. So, and they don't need me anymore.
So a year into it, where do you see it going? I mean, you've laid that out a little bit. You want to see it grow. What do you think you're going to do in the next 2 years while you're under that grant money?
So I think in the next 2 years, I'd like to add at least one or two more providers. Right now I'm doing health fairs right here in Colonial Beach once a month. I'm at the Colonial Beach Volunteer Fire Department. Usually it's the second Thursday of every month from 1 to 3. And we're right there outside of the firehouse. And I'm doing health fair checks. So blood pressure, blood sugar checks, talking about medications, answering any health questions they may have. I'm giving out resources and pill boxes and education material. And I also bring peer support with me from the Community Service Board. So they're there to help offer resources for substance abuse and mental health. So I'd like to have more health fairs and get that out. You know, like I said, right now I'm kind of limited to once a month, where I'd like to grow that and continue to have that to be more available to everyone. And
I've got a copy of the flyer from the last one. So the last one was October the 12th,
yeah,
from 1 to 3. Mm-hmm. That's a Thursday. So it's the second Thursday of each month.
Yes.
From 1 to 3,
yeah,
at the Colonial Beach Fire Department.
That's correct.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. And that's something you're going to continue to do each month?
Yes.
And maybe grow to more than once a month?
So, yes, time. I would like to, yeah. So, again, I think just education, getting out there and letting people know that I'm here, that I want to help, and just spreading that resource out for everyone.
Who are the people that you feel don't know about you that you want to reach out to the most?
So I think where I'm the most impactful are people that are struggling with substance abuse. I want them to know that there is somebody that will walk them through and get them the help and the support that they need to battle addiction. It's near and dear to my heart. I had a family member she's a recovered heroin addict. And it was really difficult watching her struggle through that. And I want to offer support not only to the addicts, but I also want to offer support to the family, because I know that they're hurting and struggling just as much, and there's resources for them too. So I want to take away the shame that people feel about offering or asking for help. And just know that there is somebody out there that really does care and really does want to hold their hand and walk them through this, people that are struggling.
Because of your personal experience,
yeah,
with,
yeah,
a family member.
Yeah.
And I think it's an amazing program that you've got here, in the sense that you were pulling it all together from a variety of viewpoints to, you know, help the person who needs the critical help, but also help the people around them, help improve their environment. I mean, you're, as you said, holistic. It's you're looking at the entire environment that person is in, and the other people around them, their loved ones around them, to try and improve all of that. That's why I called you a life coach, because it's sort of teaching people how to fix these problems that they have, that they're just overwhelmed with and don't know where to start.
Yeah.
And as you said, it's a free program being done by the county. I think people would never even think that something like this exists. There's actually somebody I can call to help me through this thing that I don't understand even how to get started. Mm-hmm. That's, I think I would expect that, that what you get are people who like say, I didn't even know where to start with this. I've got, you know, the somebody who needs my help, or I've got a substance abuse problem or whatever. I didn't know who to call, yeah. You know?
Well, and I think a lot of times, like when I meet families, they at first are a little hesitant to even take my services. They don't understand it. A lot of times they think I'm social services or that I'm here to push something on them. I'm here to just advocate for them. They're in the driver's seat. So I'm never going to force anyone to do anything they don't want to do. I'm not here to, you know, step on anyone's toes. And I think that usually within an hour of us meeting and discussing, they go, oh, I get it now. I get what you're here for, and I'm so glad you're here.
But you know. But there's a barrier there. You know, we live in a society where so often the other shoe drops and suddenly you're selling me something, yeah. Or, you know, or you're going to present me with a bill or whatever.
Yeah.
And suddenly I'm like, ah, now I understand you're going to make money off of me, you know, and that's not the case here. And so people, right. I could see people being hesitant at first and going, what's the catch?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I do, I find that. And, you know, like I said, I've had family members that they go, well, we're doing just fine on our own. We don't need you. And I go, well, you know, do you mind if I just, you know, have a chat for a little while? And then by the end of the conversation, they're like, oh, whew, they feel a relief, you know, because people don't understand what mobile integrated healthcare is. They've never heard of it. And again, you know, I'm a complete stranger coming into their home and
right behind the fire department or somebody.
Yeah, yeah. And they're going, you know, what's the catch?
Yep.
There is no catch.
Right.
So,
right.
You know,
I completely understand. And I think I would at first feel the same way, mm-hmm. not having known about mobile integrated healthcare myself before you came into our studios.
Yeah, yeah. So, and it takes time, you know, you build that relationship. And that's one of the things that I enjoy the most. That's one thing I loved about nursing that I wasn't getting when I worked on an ambulance, was being able to build that rapport and that relationship. And I absolutely love that, of really getting to know a person and why they do what they do and why, you know, even in nursing, our patients came to the hospital. They came to us. So you don't really get to understand. You just go, oh, this patient is non-compliant. They're not taking their meds. They're not taking care of themselves. Well, you don't really get to see the whole picture. Mm. Where when you go into someone's home, you get to see how they live, what their environment is like, you know, what financial barriers they have, and logistical barriers, you know,
as
living,
you said,
in a rural area.
Some don't have transportation.
Right. So you get to see really the whole person if you look hard enough and you to understand really why people are struggling with their health. And a lot of times it's just an educational piece too. You know, healthcare has changed so drastically. We used to have doctors that would come to our homes and visit us and knew our whole family and,
My doctor growing up, I had the same doctor. He was there at my birth and was my doctor for the, you know, a long period of my life.
Right. My pediatrician was also my mother's pediatrician. And, you know, and so, you know, we just don't see that in healthcare anymore.
No.
And now, you know, due to the strain of healthcare, doctors, you're lucky to see them for 5-10 minutes. You get diagnosed with, say, diabetes. In 5-10 minutes, there's absolutely no way for you to understand what that means. How do you take care of yourself? How do you check your blood sugar? What foods do you eat? There's no way to fit that into a 5-10 minute visit.
And so, we could do a whole show on the problems of the healthcare system. So let's not go down that road.
I know, right? Yeah. That's a slippery slope. But, you know, when you're able to go into somebody's home environment where they're comfortable and they start to open up and tell you, you know, what's really going on in their lives, that's where you really get to work and you're able to figure out what the real issue is and how to solve it.
And you see the diabetic snacking on candy and you go, oh.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
You have to be quite observant in this job.
So you do. Yeah. So you take in the entire picture. Like I said, when you from the moment that you pull up, you're looking at trip hazards and fire hazards and looking to see just even how somebody takes their medicines. Do they have, you know, 20, 30 different bottles and some of them are duplicates? And, you know, are they all in disarray? And now you see that maybe they're struggling to manage their medicine when it could be as simple as organizing a pill box. I mean, I have some patients that I visit, you know, every week and fill their pill box for them because there's no one that can do that. So I make sure that, that they're getting their medicines appropriately. And that alone keeps them from...
Compliant.
Yeah, it keeps them compliant and it keeps them from having an emergency, you know, where they've overdosed accidentally or they're having high blood pressure because they forgot to take their blood pressure meds. So
it's amazing how simple some of the solutions are.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're right there in front of us. And yet you have to take the time to figure it out and go, wait a minute, if you just do this, it'll be fine.
Yeah. A lot of times, honestly, it's a very simple solution. So
that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tiffany, thank you very much for coming in. Is there anything that that I should have asked you because I don't know much about mobile integrated healthcare that you wish I had?
No, I think we covered everything that I, you know, set out to do. I just, again, wanted to bring some awareness to the residents that this is a resource that's available to them. I'm so proud of this program and what we're doing. So I'm here and just want to let everybody know that, that you know, if they have any questions or need anything, to please reach out.
So once again, Tiffany Bounds, you're the director, the coordinator for the Mobile Integrated Healthcare Program at Westmoreland County, and you can be reached at mih@westmoreland-county.org. That's her email address, or her office phone number, 804-493-9147 for any of your questions or concerns about mobile integrated healthcare. Tiffany, thanks so much for coming into WWER.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoy the programming on WWER, please consider making a donation. You can find out more at wwer.org/membership.